Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Friday, November 18th, 2022. Front page. Lesser prairie chicken endangered. PBPA president says decision is careless and irresponsible. Activists say this is terrific news for these fascinating birds. By Mella McEwen. Almost 18 months after proposing listings and almost 6 months after its deadline, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has issued its decision to list the lesser prairie chicken under the Endangered Species Act. The service is listing the Southern District population segment of the animal, which is found in eastern New Mexico and across the southwest Texas panhandle, as endangered. The northern DPS segment, found in southeastern Colorado, south central to western Kansas, western Oklahoma, and the northeast Texas panhandle, is being listed as threatened. Today's U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's decision to list the lesser prairie chicken is careless and irresponsible. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email. This action discards years of valuable progress with voluntary programs that have proven to be successful in conserving the species. Many PBPA member companies have a demonstrated record of development and ongoing support of successful habitat management and conservation programs, typically in partnership with the service and state fish and game agencies. Shepard went on to note that oil and gas companies have invested significant resources and participated in conservation agreements in which tens of thousands of acres of habitat have been enrolled and tens of millions of dollars have been spent to protect the species, stabilizing and increasing the LPC populations throughout the range and yielding measurable successes that also have shown minimal habitat disruption. Since the state and stakeholder conservation efforts began in 2014, LPC populations have continued to increase, Shepard wrote. Undermining these existing state-led conservation efforts will invariably lead to unintended consequences and prove to have unnecessary adverse impacts to the LPC and the landscape that is its habitat. He concluded, the PBPA is extremely disappointed that the service ignored the best available science and chose to list for other reasons. Congressman August Pfluger, whose District 11 encompasses the Permian Basin, issued a statement decrying the decision. The Biden administration has chosen to continue their assault on Texas energy and agriculture producers today by listing the lesser prairie chicken as an endangered species, the Republican told the Reporter Telegram by email. This decision will wreak havoc on our local and state economies and make it even harder to produce oil and gas in the midst of an energy and economic crisis. President Biden needs to get out of the business of overregulating and focus on unleashing American energy dominance. The federal government must unleash American energy dominance in a balanced manner through ongoing local and state conservation efforts, Pfluger continued. We can protect important species without devastating our local and rural communities, Pfluger wrote. I look forward to passing legislation to modernize the ESA and hold the Biden administration in check in the new House Republican majority. The congressman introduced H.R. 4370, the Listing Reform Act, to modernize the Endangered Species Act and prevent the ESA from being used as a weapon against critical agriculture and energy industries. This legislation reforms the ESA to deliver reasonable, common-sense protections for endangered species while preventing overbearing regulations coming from Washington, D.C. Notably, the bill also requires the federal government to analyze the costs of ESA listings in our communities and critical industries. The bill is supported by the Texas Farm Bureau, the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, the National Endangered Species Act Reform Coalition, and the Texas Cattle Feeders Association. This is terrific news for these fascinating birds and the overlooked and much exploited prairies where they live, said Michael Robinson of the Center for Biological Diversity. We wish that the Fish and Wildlife Service hadn't delayed this protection for 27 years, because quicker action would have meant a lot more lesser prairie chickens alive in a lot more places today. We'll watch these next steps closely to ensure there are also strong protections for the wild places where these birds live. The final rule to list the two distinct population segments of the lesser prairie chicken and the final 4D rule, allowing farmers in the northern segment to continue routine agriculture activities on existing cultivated land, will publish in the Federal Register on November 25th and become effective 60 days after publication. 40 quakes strike in less than 24 hours. RRC sends investigators to Far West Texas, by Mercedes Cordero and Stuart Doreen. The area of Mentone in Reeves County was shaken Wednesday and Thursday, with 40 earthquakes reported in less than 24 hours. The biggest quake of them all was the 5.4 magnitude quake that was felt as far as Midland, San Antonio, and Ciudad Juarez, according to reports, including one from the Associated Press. It was the third strongest earthquake in the state's history. The series of tremors, specifically the 5.4 magnitude quake, was enough for the Railroad Commission to announce it was deploying inspectors to Reeves County. The strongest of all the tremors on Wednesday was the strongest recorded in the lower 48 states this calendar year. The agency is monitoring seismic data from the United States Geological Survey, the TexNet Seismic Monitoring Program, and private operator monitoring stations, and will take any actions necessary to protect public safety and the environment, the Railroad Commission said in a news release on Thursday. RRC inspectors are examining disposal activity at injection wells in the area, and staff is also reviewing permit requirements and operators' seismic response plans in the northern Culberson Reeves Seismic Response Area, SRA. The quakes took place in relatively the same area as west-southwest of Mentone. The first quake, the 5.4 magnitude earthquake, took place 25.5 miles west-southwest of Mentone around 3:32 p.m. 31 quakes ranging from 1.9 to 4.1 in magnitude were reported between 3:39 and 7:49 p.m., according to the USGS. At 9:54 p.m., the quakes returned ranging from 2.1 to 3.8 in magnitude. The last seven earthquakes, including the five that took place Thursday through 3 p.m., were less than magnitude 3.0, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. The same site showed 42 quakes had taken place within the last 24 hours of the 5.4 magnitude quake. It also showed 70 quakes within the last 7 days, 199 in the past 30 days, and 1,668 in the past 365 days. TexNet, the Texas State Earthquake Monitoring Network, stated the following about the seismic activity. We are still investigating the data associated with these seismic events, said Scott W. Tinker, the state geologist of Texas and the director of the Bureau of Economic Geology. Our first concern, of course, is for any people who might have been affected by these earthquakes. The professional scientists on the TexNet team, led by Alexandros Savades, are working diligently to analyze the data that we've received from the TexNet network of monitoring stations. The Associated Press reported Thursday that State Representative Eddie Morales Jr., whose district includes Mentone, said he spoke with local authorities and there were no reported injuries. He said via Twitter that state officials will be inspecting roads, bridges, and other infrastructure as a precaution. In March, the Reporter-Telegram reported Permian Basin oil and gas operators have teamed up with the Railroad Commission in crafting a plan to address the growing rate and intensity of seismic activity in the region. The first of its kind, operator-led response plan, the Northern Culberson Reeves Seismic Response Area, was being implemented by the commission. The plan has a goal of reducing the intensity and frequency of earthquakes including eliminating 3.5 magnitude or greater earthquakes by the end of 2023. Based on the reviews and meetings with operators, action will be taken on steps outlined in the Operator-Led Response Plan, OLRP, the RRC stated. Actions outlined in the plan include, but are not limited to, expanding SRA boundaries and further reducing injection volumes. The OLRP requires all deep disposal wells within a 9-kilometer boundary in the SRA to shut in for 24 months if a magnitude 4.5 or greater earthquake occurs within the boundary. There are no active deep disposal wells within the 9-kilometer boundary. Reduction of injection volume from shallow disposal wells has occurred on the schedule contained in the OLRP. The commission also stated there is a potential lag time between changes in injection rates and changes in seismic activity varies. Historical activity indicates a potential lag time of 12 to 18 months, the RRC stated. RRC staff will continue to work in oversight toward reducing earthquakes in the region to keep residents and the environment safe. Small bites. Where to get your Thanksgiving fill? Catering and restaurants offering dine-in or to-go holiday meals by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Don't want to cook for Thanksgiving this year? Here's a list of local catering options, restaurants offering dine-in to free give back events. Give back events. Addie's Diner. A volunteer and donation based shindig can be found at Addie's Diner from noon to 2 p.m. Thursday. Everyone is welcome to the 50s themed spot to enjoy a nice, warm, large meal. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, contact the Addie's crew at 432-686-2044. Address 304 East Florida Avenue. Online bit.ly/3umb8ar. Curbside Bistro. Coming in hot for year 8, Curbside Bistro's Thanksgiving dinner takes place at 11 a.m. Thursday. Through donations and volunteers, the restaurant gives free meals to anyone in need, no questions asked, and all first responders. Guests can expect all the fixings to include a drink and a dessert. Drive-through only. 3816 Andrews Highway, Odessa. Online, facebook.com/curbsidebistro2014. Midland Soup Kitchen. The 36th annual Thanksgiving lunch takes place from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday. The dining event will be indoors and stands open to the community. All volunteer spots have been filled. 1401 Orchard Lane. Online, facebook.com/Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry. Catering and pickup. Cafe at the Gardens. Want to keep the family side dish recipes alive, but don't want to mess with the meat? Cafe at the Gardens offers smoked large toms, 20 to 22 pounds, hens, 12 to 14 pounds, and hams, 9 to 11 pounds. To reserve a main poultry, call 432-687-1478. Last day to order is today, Friday, November 18th, 3300 North Fairgrounds Road. Online, facebook.com/cafe-at-the-gardens. Cracker Barrel. Two options from Cracker Barrel make up the Thanksgiving-themed ready-to-reheat menu. The Heat and Serve Feast serves 8 to 10, comes in at $150, and includes two turkey breasts, dressing, gravy, cranberry relish, sweet potato casserole, two sides, rolls, and a pumpkin and a pecan pie. The Heat and Serve family dinner serves 4 to 6, comes in at $100, and includes one turkey breast, dressing, gravy, cranberry relish, sweet potato casserole, one side, and rolls. Two ham dishes and a prime rib dish can also be purchased, as well as individual pies, available through November 26th. 3108 North Loop 250 West. Online, crackerbarrel.com. Juicy and Tender Catering. Smoked turkey, ham, and whole briskets conclude the entrees for Juicy and Tender Catering. For sides, mashed potatoes, candied yams, southern-style green beans, broccoli and rice casserole, and cranberry walnut salad. Desserts include pumpkin, pecan, and millionaire pie, as well as carrot cake and banana pudding. Homemade dressing by the pan can also be bought. Pricing and availability differs, so call 432-425-7908 or 432-271-1627 for more information. Last day to order is Saturday, November 19th, 3604 Fairmont Drive. Online, facebook.com/juicyandtendering catering. Market Street. An array of pickup orders fill the Market Street holiday order list. For $130, order a roasted turkey or turkey breast dinner, accompanied by her giblet gravy, cranberry relish, homestyle cornbread dressing, green bean amadine, mashed potatoes, and praline sweet potatoes. Both serve 8 to 10. The sweet slice ham, also $130, and serving 8 to 10, comes with a ham glaze, broccoli rice casserole, green bean amadine, hash brown casserole, and praline sweet potatoes. For $200, the prime rib serves 4 to 6 and includes green bean amadine, hash brown casserole, boar's head horseradish sauce, broccoli rice casserole, and praline sweet potatoes. The store also offers side-only boxes at $60. All meals come cold, fully cooked, and ready to eat. Last day to order is Monday, 4706 North Midkiff Road. Online, marketstreetunited.com/holiday dinners. Scotty's Soul Food. At Scotty's Soul Food, customers can order a Thanksgiving meal coming in at $350 and serving 10 people full with turkey, ham, dressing, cranberry sauce, giblet dressing, and buyer's choice of four sides. Seafood dressing, packed with shrimp, crawfish, and crab, can be bought in a $130 full pan or $65 half pan. To reserve a meal, call 432-218-8931 or go in person. Last day to order is Monday, 523 East Illinois Street. Online, bit.ly/3UKSDBC. Tall City Bistro. A meal sufficient for 10 people, Tall City Bistro's special includes a roasted turkey, baked ham, mashed potatoes, green beans, dressing, sweet potatoes, turkey giblets, and pecan, pumpkin, or apple pie. The feast costs $185. Last day to order is Saturday, November 17th. Call 432-247-1223 or 432-813-9840 after business hours. 400 West Illinois Avenue. Online, facebook.com/Tall City Bistro. Dine in. Buffalo Wild Wings. According to employees at the Midland location, Buffalo Wild Wings will remain open Thanksgiving Day. No specials or different operating hours were given to the Reporter Telegram. 11 a.m. to 2 a.m., 5107 West Wadley. Cracker Barrel. For booth sitters, three specialty options stand available for Thanksgiving Day only. The first, a homestyle turkey and dressing meal, equipped with turkey and dressing with gravy, cranberry relish, sweet potato casserole with pecans, green beans, dinner rolls, and pecan pie, $15. The second, chicken and dumplings, slow simmered and served with eater's choice of two country sides and dinner rolls, $9. The last, a country vegetable plate of four country sides and dinner rolls, $10. These meals can also be ordered for pickup, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., 3108 North Loop 250 West. Online, cracker-barrel.com/menu/Thanksgiving-day. Denny's. The annual Thanksgiving dinner, including turkey with gravy, mashed potatoes, vegetables, and cranberry sauce, is back at the all-day breakfast chain. 24 hours, 3701 West Wall Street. Online, Denny's.com. Johnny Carino's. For both dine-in and to-go, patrons can enjoy a $22, $10 for ages 10 and under, dish, starting with either a house or Caesar salad, an endless fresh baked bread, an entree consisting of hand-carved roasted turkey with gravy, cornbread stuffing, red skin mashed potatoes, candied yams, fresh vegetable medley, and cranberry sauce, and a pumpkin pie topped with whipped cream to seal the deal. Also available, a $65 turkey family platter. Noon to 8 p.m., 4711 West Loop 250, Carinos.com. Texas Lodge Bar and Grill. The local crew at Texas Lodge Bar and Grill serve up authentic Cuban, American, and Italian cuisines. Offering allergy-friendly and vegan options, the restaurant can hit everyone's cravings. Reserve a table at 432-218-8822. 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., 503 East Interstate 20 Frontage Road, Suite 130. Tokyo One. Don't expect a classic turkey dish at Tall City's Tokyo One. The Japanese and Korean restaurant will be open for business, according to a Facebook post, and hopes all Midlanders will come have a different and fun holiday experience with the spot for its first Thanksgiving Day open, noon to 7 p.m., 3211 West Wadley Avenue. From the inside pages of Friday's Midland Reporter Telegram. Letter from MISD. The following message was sent to Midland ISD families on Tuesday, according to the district. Dear Alamo parent, to ensure the success of every student, Midland ISD is committed to creating an environment where all students feel safe, healthy, and connected. We recognize that supporting student learning goes beyond rigorous and comprehensive experiences, and that integrated support is necessary to address the needs of the whole child. Principal Rivera recently submitted her resignation effective this week. Although a mid-year resignation does present challenges, we have taken this opportunity to handpick a new leadership team for Alamo Junior High that will guide the campus for the remainder of the school year. The new administrative team will consist of individuals who have proven to be successful in leadership roles in Midland ISD. The campus will be led by current academic director Claudia Valenzuela, who has extensive experience leading secondary campuses. She will also serve as the campus executive principal and will be supported by current MISD assistant principals Renee Barrientes, Dr. Marcus Tenajero, and Crystal Jack. This new team will be in place at Alamo starting Tuesday, Wednesday, November 16th, to begin implementing a comprehensive plan at Alamo where safety and learning are championed and disruptive behavior is not tolerated. Parents will have a chance to meet the new team at a campus meeting on November 30th, starting at 6 p.m. You'll receive more information about the meeting from Ms. Valenzuela. Students will meet the new administrative team through assemblies scheduled for tomorrow. You can help us by talking to your child about the changes and reinforce the importance of following directions, using good manners, and treating others like they would like to be treated. Thank you for trusting MISD with your child as we strive to ensure all students are educated in a safe and positive environment. MISD says Alamo principals resign, new staff steps in, by Stuart Doreen. Campus administration at Alamo Junior High has resigned, according to Midland ISD officials. The resignation includes Principal Christina Rivera and at least two assistant principals, according to the district. Midland MISD Interim Superintendent Kelly Spencer told the Reporter Telegram this week that parents have been emailed about the changes that will take place to handle the responsibilities. Spencer said the changes will result in a team that has been handpicked from across the district, including the district service center, to lead the campus for the remainder of the year. They include Claudia Valenzuela, Learning, Leading, and Innovation Director, will serve as the executive principal. Renee Barrientes from Early College High School will transition to support Valenzuela as associate principal. Crystal Jack from Jones Elementary School will transition to support Valenzuela as an assistant principal. Marcus Tinajero from Legacy High School will transition to support Valenzuela as an assistant principal. Tinajero is leaving MISD at the end of the semester, and the administration team will work to find a replacement for the second semester. This team will focus on three levers: safety, instruction, and culture. Spencer wrote, "This team is committed to the success of Alamo Junior High." AAA Texas says Midland is again home to Texas's most expensive gas, by Ben Schaefer. Midland is home to the highest gas price average in the state, AAA Texas reported Thursday. Midland's average decreased by 2 cents to $3.25, which topped the list of averages in 27 largest metro areas AAA Texas surveys. The decrease in Midland was tied for the smallest across the state. AAA Texas also reported the state's average decreased by 9 cents to $3.07. Fuel prices around most of the Lone Star State have been trending downward ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday next week, AAA Texas reported. The main reason is the global cost for oil, gasoline's main ingredient, has been stuck in a narrow price range of $85 to $92 a barrel for several weeks. AAA Texas expects 3.6 million Texans to drive 50 miles or more for the Thanksgiving holiday. Although gas prices decreased around the state and region, West Texas cities are still paying most for fuel. The five highest gas prices were found in Midland, $3.25. Wichita Falls, $3.20. Abilene, $3.20. El Paso, $3.19. And Odessa, $3.18. Longtime home to the highest gas prices in the state, El Paso experienced a 12-cent decrease to $3.19. Prices in other West Texas cities included $3.09 in Lubbock, where the price fell 8 cents this week, and $3.09 in San Angelo, where the price fell 8 cents. Texas drivers are still paying the least, $3.07, compared to the rest of the nation. The weekly report also showed Midland's current average price is $12 higher than it was a year ago. Man gets 10 years in prison for immigration crimes, by Mercedes Cordero. A Guatemalan man was sentenced Wednesday in a Midland federal court to 10 years in prison for immigration crimes, according to the Department of Justice. Mario Rigoberto Diego Esteban, a.k.a. Lentes, 26, was sentenced following his guilty plea to one count of illegal reentry after deportation and one count of transporting undocumented migrants for commercial advantage and private financial gain. The prosecution stemmed from an investigation into the death of a 21-year-old woman from Guatemala who died while being smuggled by Diego Esteban and others. The Crane County Sheriff's Office's deputies responded to a 911 call from a concerned citizen who had found the woman's body on the side of a rural highway outside Odessa, according to the press release. Homeland Security Investigation Special Agents executed a search warrant in August 2021 at two mobile homes in Odessa, at least one of which was being used as a stash house to harbor and stage the transportation of undocumented migrants, according to the press release. Agents seized ledgers identifying members of a human smuggling organization and their respective roles. The ledgers identified Diego Esteban as a person who transported undocumented migrants for the organization, according to the press release. Diego Esteban was detained December 8, 2021, near Odessa by Texas Department of Public Safety troopers. He admitted to HSI agents that he was a member of the human smuggling organization associated with the Odessa stash houses, and that he had transported 100 undocumented migrants for the organization, receiving $125 for each illegal alien, according to the press release. He also told agents he remembered transporting a Guatemalan woman to the stash house. According to the press release, Diego Esteban said he was told the woman was ill, possibly dehydrated, and described her as having difficulty walking and not being able to remain conscious during transport. The investigation confirmed that the remains found near the rural highway outside of Odessa were those of the woman Diego Esteban remembered transporting. The investigation also revealed that she died upon arriving at the stash house. The complete lack of concern for a young woman's life in this case is appalling, and yet smuggling networks like these continue to flourish because it is not about preserving life, but about cold, hard cash, said U.S. Attorney Ashley C. Hoff. Along with our partners, both in the United States and worldwide, we will continue to do all in our power to stop these networks and hold the smugglers accountable. The tragic loss of life in this case is an example of the very real risks people face when they put their lives into the hands of smugglers, said Special Agent in Charge Francisco B. Barola, HSI El Paso. Those responsible for illegally moving people into and through our country place personal profit ahead of public safety. Driven by greed, they have little regard for the health and well-being of their human cargo, which can be a deadly combination. From the Business and Oil page, Perryman says, Permian positives power growth, by Mella McEwen. Odessa. Like the rest of the global economy, Permian Basin residents have concerns about the cost of living and inflation and slowing economies. That's true, said economist Ray Perryman as he concluded his tour of Texas offering economic forecasts for the state's various regions. But the region has some positives to appreciate as well, he pointed out. The region's oil and gas resources will always dominate, he said as he addressed the Permian Basin economy during his conference at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. But the Permian Basin also is a significant renewable energy sector. 10% of the solar power projects under construction in the U.S. are being built in the Permian, he said, and Texas leads the nation in wind power. The region is also growing its manufacturing sector, he said, listing the emerging aerospace sector as an example, while healthcare is also fueling the economy. He pronounced the Permian Basin economically healthy, and while it may have slowed a bit, he said it is on the upswing as evidenced by job growth, output growth, and sales growth. Population has also been growing. While the U.S. population growth rate has fallen to historic lows, he said the Permian Basin's rate exceeds that of Texas. That's very important because going forward, we're going to need people, he said. There are some headwinds, he said, such as a labor shortage. Despite the region's population growth, workers are still needed. And there are still some kinks in the supply chain to be worked out. And inflation is impacting the area's dominant oil and gas industry. It affects the cost of drilling a well, of labor, of materials, Perryman said. It's a more difficult environment. Even so, he estimates the break-even cost of a Permian Basin well is $61 to $64 a barrel, well below current prices, so there's plenty of margin there. The Permian Basin's oil and gas resources are vital to the world, he said, something the Biden administration needs to forecast. Even the administration's own U.S. Department of Energy is forecasting rising demand for fossil fuels while also trying to prevent oil and natural gas production. We need to deal with climate change, certainly, but we also need a cohesive strategy to provide energy to the world, Perryman said. I don't think the administration recognizes that just yet. Perryman said he expects the high inflation rate will ease, but it will take months to settle out. He said he sees a reasonable probability of an economic recession next year. While the Permian Basin will feel the effects, the region's oil and gas resources will provide some protection. We will see a bigger slowdown in the U.S. economy than here, Perryman predicted. Obituaries from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Friday, November 18, 2022. Lisa Hollifield. Lisa Luann Hopkins Hollifield passed away peacefully Thursday, November 10, 2022, in Midland, Texas. Lisa hit the floor running as the firstborn child of Dugan and Linda Hopkins, arriving September 17, 1958, in Gina, Louisiana. Lisa is preceded in death by the love of her life, husband Steve Lemuel Hollifield Jr. of Midland. Father, Carlton Douglas Dugan Hopkins of Midland. Brother Douglas Nelson Hopper Hopkins. Great niece Hunter Ann Smith of Midland. Great nephew Gunner Craig Smith of Powell, Tennessee. Mother-in-law Sandra Nell Hollifield of Midland. Father-in-law Steve Lemuel Hollifield of Midland. Brother-in-law James Jeffrey Hollifield of Midland. Lisa is survived by her four children, daughters Landry Allison Hollifield of Midland, Lindsay Joelle Venerable, and husband Travis Michael Venerable of Midland, Laramaine Jane Hollifield and fiancé Brett Vaughn Harriman of Sunnyvale, Texas, son Lemuel Jacob Jake Hollifield of Midland, plus grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. The family will receive friends Thursday, November 17th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the branch at Nally Pickle and Welch in Midland. Celebration of Life will be held Friday at 2 p.m. at Stonegate Fellowship Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. The family asks any donation made in her name be directed to the All Heart Gunner Foundation, a foundation very near to her heart in honor of her great nephew, Gunner. www.allheartgunner.com. Arrangements under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch and Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Death notices. Josu Alicio Cifuentes. Josu Alicio Cifuentes, 36, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, November 16th. Visitation will take place 6 to 8 p.m. Monday, November 21st at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. The funeral service will be held 2 p.m. Tuesday, November 22nd at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, November 18th, 2022. State rejects dangerous radioactivity at Andrews. Battle over federal license rages in federal court. Andrews. A partnership of waste control specialists and Orano USA appears stymied in its ambition to store large amounts of high-level radioactive waste near the low-level WCS repository that's been operating 30 miles west of here since 2012. The company, Interim Storage Partners, touched off a firestorm when it announced the plan early last year. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, Republican Congressman August Pfluger, and Governor Greg Abbott excoriated it, saying the waste could end up contaminating the Permian Basin's groundwater and oil and natural gas reserves. On July 30, 2021, the Andrews County Commissioner's Court passed a resolution opposing the plan. Soon afterward, the Texas House of Representatives passed Landgraf's House Bill 7, which was calculated to stop it just before the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued ISP a license to proceed. Now the state of Texas is arguing a petition in the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans to negate the NRC's license. ISP did not respond to a request for comment this week. Lugar said Wednesday night from Washington, D.C. that he, quote, will continue working to make sure the Permian Basin is not a temporary dumping ground for high-level nuclear waste, while the federal government drags its feet in finding a permanent repository. The interim storage of nuclear waste in our nation's most productive oil field poses a significant energy and national security threat, and I am proud to be working alongside my colleagues at the state and federal levels to ensure that this does not become a reality for West Texas, end quote. Landgraf said Tuesday that he, quote, will always stand with the people of Andrews when it comes to anything related to the low-level radioactive waste disposal facility located in Andrews County. Quote, there is only one such facility in our state, and the folks who live closest to it should have the loudest voice concerning its operation, end quote. The chairman of the Texas House Environmental Regulation Committee in Austin said, referring to his 81st district having lost Andrews County to redistricting, he said, quote, while I'm sad that I will no longer be the state representative for Andrews County when the 2023 legislative session begins, the people of Andrews will always have a special place in my heart, and they will always have my ear when it comes to matters pertaining to radioactive waste disposal in our great state, end quote. In calling the legislature's second special session last year, Abbott said a bill should be passed, quote, reforming the laws governing radioactive waste to protect the safety of Texans, including by further limiting the ability to store and transport high-level radioactive materials in this state, end quote. Abbott joined Texas' petition last February 8th to urge the Fifth Circuit to vacate the NRC's license. Quote, I will not let Texas become America's dumping ground for deadly radioactive waste, end quote, he said. Quote, that is why I signed House Bill 7 at a special session to ban the disposal or storage of high-level radioactive waste in Texas. And it is why I am suing the Nuclear Regulatory Commission over its illegal licensing decision in this case. I will continue pursuing every legal avenue to protect the Permian Basin, which is crucial to America's energy security, and to keep all Texans safe from nuclear waste, end quote. Interim storage partners would have to build a facility to store the waste from around the state and nation, and HB 7 prohibits the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality from issuing the necessary permits. Orano USA is an affiliate of a French company. Awaiting a permanent repository, 90,000 metric tons of spent fuel rods and other waste are being stored, where they were generated at some 80 nuclear plants and research sites around the nation. Yucca Mountain, 100 miles northwest of Las Vegas, Nevada, was considered till political opposition eliminated it in 2010. High-level nuclear waste is being stored on site on the campuses of Texas A&M University in College Station and the University of Texas at Austin. The Reliant NRG STP nuclear project adjacent to Matagorda Bay on the Gulf Coast and near Glenrose, 40 miles southwest of Fort Worth at the Comanche Peak Nuclear Power Plant. HB7 says, quote, with the exception of a permit for a facility located at the site of currently or formerly operating nuclear power reactors and currently or formerly operating nuclear research and test reactors operated by a university, the commission may not, under the authority give to it under the Texas Clean Water Act, issue a general construction permit or approve a stormwater pollution prevention plan or issue a permit under the Texas Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Program for the construction or operation of a facility that is licensed for the storage of high-level radioactive waste by the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission, end quote. Giving back. Curbside ready for 8th annual Thanksgiving event. For the 8th year, Curbside Bistro is hosting its annual free Thanksgiving Day event. The event is scheduled to begin at 11 a.m. Thursday, and plates loaded with turkey, ham, mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce, and stuffing will be served along with a drink and dessert. The plates are free. Curbside Bistro will operate as drive-through only. Again, as Chef Alejandro Barrientos, who is co-owner of Curbside Bistro with his wife Stephanie, said that seems to be the most efficient way to serve as many people as possible. Quote, we found with that model we are able to feed a lot more people, end quote, Barrientos said. Quote, more and more people like that because they can go home and have their tradition. They can be with their families and their kiddos, end quote. A year ago, Curbside Bistro served 1,100 plates. Barrientos said he's hoping to surpass that mark and reach 1,500 plates. He said the first free Thanksgiving Day event served 300 plates, and it has steadily grown each year. Barrientos explained that as long as he's legally allowed to serve food this free Thanksgiving Day event will continue. The ability to host a free Thanksgiving Day event is due in large part to donations and volunteers. He said there will be between 30 to 40 volunteers at one time. Quote, it truly is for a community by a community, end quote, he said. Quote, we couldn't do this without everybody's help. Everybody is just as much part of it as we are, end quote. A couple of large donations came from Sam's Club, which supplied desserts and drinks. Barrientos also explained that he had trouble finding turkeys since the beginning of October. However, that changed when the newly established eatery Pickles donated 100 turkeys. Despite rising inflation and searching for turkeys for more than a month, Barrientos said the thought of not having the free Thanksgiving Day event never crossed his mind. He said whether he received turkeys or not, the event would still go on, as he would simply substitute chicken for turkey. Quote, whenever we were dealing with the turkey shortage, I was going to do fried chicken or smoked chicken, end quote, Chef Alejandro said. Quote, if we couldn't do turkeys, we were going to chicken. We were still going to do something. We were going to do the full plate, but the protein was going to be chicken. Inflation has been tough. Shortages have been tough. Finding employees have been tough. It's been tough all the way around. If we feel it, I know the whole community is feeling it. End quote. Opposition already up against potential bond. Ahead of any bond issue that might be called, there is already opposition on social media, encouraging people not to vote for whatever package is proposed. Quote, our opportunity is, as we think about a bond program, is first to understand the needs. What are the specific academic and facility needs that exist in ECISD? End quote. Superintendent Scott Murray said during his media call Wednesday. The district is currently conducting audits that will help it determine the needs. A bond committee is being formed that will study the needs of ECISD and make a recommendation, with the Board of Trustees ultimately calling an election. Quote, the purpose of a bond is so that our community can take care of the needs of the children that live within that community, end quote, Murray said. Quote, every community in the state of Texas has an opportunity to support their children through the bond program, end quote. ECISD is a growing district, he said. Quote, our schools are getting more and more overcrowded because of the number of people that are moving to our community. We have aging facilities. Right now, the oldest facility we have is 85 years of age, and so as they age, many times they age out and they need to be replaced. Our students need access to modern facilities. Then our career and technical education program, we turn kids away right now every single year because we simply do not have the capacity to serve all of the students that we have in career and technical education. At the end of the day, it is up to the bond committee to make a recommendation and then ultimately the Board of Trustees to call that election and determine the final elements of that bond package, end quote, Murray said. He added that a bond is the community's investment in its children. Quote, if this community believes that its children are worthy of investment, then our community will go to the polls and support a bond referendum, end quote, Murray said. Speaking as a community resident and superintendent, Murray said he sees the needs every day. Quote, I know that we have to have this. We're growing. We're aging. And our kids have academic needs that are not met today because we do not have the facilities to meet those needs. The needs are very clear. But it's up to us to make sure that we articulate clearly those needs to our community so that they understand the need to support a bond referendum, end quote, he added. On the continuing threats in ECISD, Murray said the solution needs to start with conversations between students and their parents or guardians about appropriate words to use in school. Quote, sometimes our kids can be frivolous in their use of words and say things that they don't mean. We just need to remind our kids that what you could say just a few years ago is not acceptable. Our society has changed. On the ECISD website, we have tools for parents that if you need to know how to talk to your child about these types of situations, we provide access to our parents to some tools to equip moms and dads with the type of conversations and the words to use, end quote, Murray said. Quote, I would encourage our parents, if a child is feeling threatened or bullied or angry, remind your children about how to handle situations like that. Violence is not the way to solve, is not the way we solve problems. At ECISD, we do not teach our kids to use violence to solve their problems. We teach them to use healthy words to solve their problems. We teach them to reach out to an adult to help them solve their problems, and those are things that we will continue to teach, end quote, he added. As part of the daily curriculum, teachers can provide students with tools to use should they become frustrated, angered, or saddened by a situation at school. Quote, there's always more we can do, absolutely, but I think we must continue to educate our kids both at home and at school with how to handle difficult situations which affect all of us, end quote, Murray said. He added that he thinks the Uvalde school shooting has driven a lot of the consequences we're seeing today. A few years ago, when an adult heard a child making a threat about a gun or a weapon, they might just talk to the child and tell them not to say or do that again. Quote, today, we handle that situation differently. We now notify the administrative team and we notify law enforcement, and so there are very different consequences today for literally words that kids and adults would say just a few years ago, end quote, Murray said. Quote, we don't want violence to occur in our schools. Schools are not a place for violence at all. Both our students and our staff members take that very seriously. And we have many more instances today of adults and kids reporting to law enforcement entities things that other students are saying, words they're using. Certainly there are consequences today for inappropriate words, end quote. Anger management is part of the social-emotional learning provided to students. Quote, we also have some opportunities for parents. Our social workers provide some parenting opportunities. We can equip our parents not only with written resources in English and in Spanish, but we also have some classes that we provide for moms and dads that may just want information on how they can support their kids at home. We're again happy to provide written information, but we also have opportunities for moms and dads to come together and to learn from some experts some strategies that may be helpful in the home environment, end quote, Murray said. Asked whether the level of offense can be raised from a misdemeanor to a felony through advocates like lawmakers, Murray said that is the law enforcement and judicial side of things. Quote, our opportunity is to equip kids with tools and resources and words that they can use, things that they can say to avoid situations like that. But once a child makes an unfortunate choice and law enforcement is involved, that's out of our hands. We don't make a determination if it's a misdemeanor or a felony. That's the legal process that has to work through that. But I'll remind everybody that we serve children from the age of 3 all the way to 18, and sometimes children make mistakes that an hour later, a day later, a week later, they wish they hadn't made. I think we always have to be mindful of that and remember that our responsibility is to educate our kids and inform our kids so they don't make those mistakes. I think sometimes the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony is remembering the type of individual that you're working with. When it's a 10-year-old kid that makes an inappropriate comment, is that really a felony or is it a misdemeanor? So our job as educators is to help them not make those choices. But when they do, once again, that is out of our hands, end quote, he said. Murray added that students have to learn that this is not a game. Quote, this is life. This is real. We have to do the same thing as teachers and administrators constantly remind our kids that what they say and what they do have consequences, whether it's a positive thing you say and there are positive consequences or a negative thing and negative consequences. At the end of the day, I'm confident with what our judicial system is doing right now. Our police officers, our district attorneys, our judges, we're all working through this together, but we've got to solve this on the front end. Our kids are screaming for help right now. There's a reason that they're saying these things and doing these things, end quote, Murray said. He added that a significant increase in mental health situation is being seen at every level and with adults. Quote, punishment is not how you solve a mental health problem. It is support. It is therapy. It is counseling. And the list goes on. There are proactive things that we can do to address an individual, to support and help an individual when they're struggling with mental health issue. Jail does not solve the mental health challenge that individual may face. We might use jail to help keep the individual and society safe, but that is not going to solve the problem for that individual. We've got to make sure they get the help that they need, end quote, he said. On other topics, Murray said, during this week's board meeting, the financial auditor said ECISD had a clean financial audit once again. Quote, they commended ECISD on our work and the way that we are managing our finances in the organization. That coupled why the fact that for the third year in a row, we received a perfect score from the audit by the Texas Education Agency. So two really good pieces of information about the financial situation in ECISD. Congratulations to our Board of Trustees that oversee the financial condition of ECISD. Congratulations to Deborah Otmers, our Chief Financial Officer, and her team of individuals that ensure that our books are in alignment and our money is spent according to the way our state agencies have determined, end quote, Murray said. It was announced this week that the district has received the District of Distinction Award from the Texas Art Educator Association. Quote, this is the second year in a row that ECISD has received this prestigious award. There are 1,200 school districts in Texas, and a little over 50 of the school districts received the honor this year, end quote, Murray said. It signifies the, quote, incredible opportunities, end quote, that ECISD students have in the fine and performing arts at the elementary, middle, and high school levels. Murray also reminded parents that the district is closed next week in observance of Thanksgiving. PHS launches Adopt a Seat campaign. Long in need of an upgrade, Permian High School has started an Adopt a Seat campaign to remove and replace its auditorium seating. PHS principal Delisa Stiles said the fundraiser will pay for 1,220 seats with vinyl on the seats and backs, which makes them very durable and easy to clean. Lone Star Furnishings LLC will be the vendor. Stiles noted that Fine Arts Director Aaron Hawley and Executive Director of District Operations Courtney Smith have been instrumental in the project. She added that they are actually losing some seats due to ADA compliance. She noted that they will be removing a few seats in the back of the middle row to add a soundstage at some point. It will cost $22,436 just to remove and dispose of the chairs due to insurance. They will also have to resurface the existing floor at a cost of $106,619 for ADA compliance. The new chairs will cost $312,168, bringing the total to $441,223. The cost per chair is $361.66, but they are $400 each to account for inflation. Contributions are tax-deductible, Stiles said. You can pay in person at Permian High School or mail a check or money order to Permian High School Accounting Department. Attention, Adopt a Seat Campaign, 1800 East 42nd Street, Odessa, Texas, 79762. Quote, we hope to start it in the summer of 2023 while the kids are away, but we realize we have quite a bit of fundraising ahead of us. It's a seat at a time, a day at a time. At this point, we've had a lot of positive feedback and donations already, end quote, Stiles said. The first day that we launched this, we had an orchestra parent stop by after school and leave a check to officially adopt a seat. Also, I was going to mention that by the end of the week, we had an anonymous donor that stopped by and bought three seats. The family did not want their name disclosed, end quote. A number of the current chairs are broken, torn, and or falling apart. There are some chairs with no bottom cushion at all. Maintenance comes to weld the seats as they break, which Stiles said happens frequently. There is normally plenty of seating, but people will try two or three possibilities before finding a functional seat. Quote, this is the second set of seats at Permian. I thought they were original. The originals were placed in the mid-90s. And there was a principal at Permian that got in touch with Hearst Euless Bedford ISD, sometimes known as HEB. Trinity High School was redoing their auditorium, so these seats were actually bought secondhand from Trinity High School. Their colors, obviously, are red and black, hence the red seats, end quote, Stiles said. She added that with bond issues and Permian being more than 60 years old, you have to go for infrastructure first, as the seats might be considered cosmetic. This is Stiles' third year at Permian. Quote, I consistently receive emails asking about the seating and what the plans are. Because of the scale of this project, we had to break it down into what would be a manageable project for getting our community involved, our alumni involved, our students, our staff. And so when you think about an auditorium of 1,200 plus seats, it literally comes down to one seat at a time. This is a grassroots roll-up-your-sleeves fundraising campaigns. As donors contribute $400, it's about the cost of a seat when you add the removal, the flooring, the seat, a small fraction for inflation. We have donors that are happy to write a check for $400. We realize, especially now with the economy and inflation, that that's not possible for some people. We respect that, but we're taking donations of any size, end quote. They were also conducting a sale of Mojo Spirit shirts for $10 each. For every shirt they sold, they made $10, so 40 shirts would add up to a seat. The auditorium, she said, is the hub of the school. It's the site of fine arts performances, athletic signings, senior class, staff, and parent meetings. Quote, we want to make this a place where we can be proud of inviting guests into our auditorium. So yes, it is layers. The first layer, obviously, is the seating. We believe that if we can get people into the auditorium and comfortable and see the potential of our space, that we'll have more interest in the next phase of addressing the sound stage in the back. If you look up there in the corner, you can see where it's currently housed, and we want to bring that down to the midsection in the back. So we will clear out a space and lose a few seats in the back to meet ADA compliance, which has slightly changed since the seats were installed, and then plan ahead, end quote, Stiles said. The chairs will come from Lone Star. Demri Valerio, a 15-year-old sophomore, Jose Contreras, a 17-year-old junior, and Vivian Bell, a 16-year-old junior, are student Senate members. Contreras is the treasurer. Quote, "I think it's really great," end quote, Valerio said of the project. Quote, "It gives us an opportunity to really understand everything that goes on with our other departments, such as theater, choir, and anything that really uses the auditorium," end quote. Contreras said the fundraising should have started a long time ago, and he feels that the organizations that use the auditorium should have a nice space for all the work that they put in. Bell, who is in choir, said she spends a lot of time in the auditorium and has gotten feedback from her grandmother. A long time ago, at a choir concert, there was a seat that went, quote, "straight to the floor, and we had a good complaint about it," end quote. Valerio said she has friends in choir, so she goes to a lot of concerts. Quote, "It's very hard to get group seating if you want to sit with your friends to watch," end quote, Valerio said. Contreras said the refurbished auditorium is something he and his peers will be able to visit in the future. He is a percussionist in the band, and they would like to use it for concerts, but they wind up using the Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. Stiles noted that they often have to use off-site spaces. Once they complete the project, she said, they will be able to use what they were paying in rental fees back and do other levels of restoration. Quote, "We are elated to finally put it out there. Again, ideally, we hope to start in the summer, but we're committed however long it takes. We'll sell one seat at a time until we sell 1,220, end quote, Stiles said. If they do have any surplus after the project, they will move on to revamping the stage area, updating the curtains and panels in the front. Quote, "It's like any project. It starts evolving into more, and we just want to focus primarily on this portion of making sure that we treat our guests well when they come in the auditorium," end quote, Stiles said. Quote, "We want to bring things back to our own auditorium," end quote, she added.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.